HabsOldOrchard.com.
Habs get ready to take on the St. Louis Blues tomorrow night, and at the same time, the Penguins will be playing host to the Rangers. That's where Pierre McGuire is, in Pittsburgh. How are you, Pierre?
How did Brendan Gallagher cheer for the Cincinnati Bengals?
Do you know the background? He was on with us all year last year, so I know there must be a backstory.
There is, and he has brought it up, and I cannot recall. It might be Andy Dalton and like the color of his hair or something weird like
what?
That.
But
what?
Did you know there's a team just south of Vancouver in Seattle?
Yeah.
Yeah, although he spent a lot of time in Winnipeg as well, right? Which still doesn't make sense when it comes
to
Cincinnati.
Your Minnesota Vikings fan because of Bud Grant. Come on.
Well, somebody, we
have to find out.
Somebody listening has heard the story, and because he's not just a fan, he's a junkie. He's a Bengals junkie. He's a crazy Bengals fan.
If you want, I'll hook him up with Boomer Esiason at some point. How's that?
Oh, that would be thrilling for him if he.
Send Boomer a note and tell him,
because Boomer Esiason is a big hockey guy, right?
Huge hockey guy. His future son-in-law plays for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Who's that?
Matt Martin.
Oh, mm-hmm. Future son-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay, let's go. Let's talk hockey now.
10-1, Pierre. I mean, in the last two
games. Listen, that's not Montreal's fault.
10-1.
The other guys chose not to show up. You heard it. I remember we talked about Henrik Zetterberg the other day, and I said he's the captain of the first team that didn't make the playoffs in 25 years, and I know he took that personally. Did you hear what he said after the game?
That's as low as it gets.
That's as low as it gets, and that is a proud man. That is not only a great player, that is a very proud man. You could just hear it. You got to think, you know, something's going to give there. I don't know what, but something will. There's no way they're tolerating this in Detroit. No way. Kenny Holland's too professional. Jimmy Devolano's too smooth and smart. There's no way they're tolerating this. No way.
And again, that was after giving up 6 goals on home ice 2 nights earlier.
Oh, I think we're all embarrassed. I mean, I don't know how you go through that game and you're not embarrassed. So, yeah, every one of us is embarrassed. But, you know, again, we got to decide that we don't want to allow that to happen. We got to decide. That didn't just happen to us. We allowed it to happen. We got to decide we're not going to allow it.
So, again, from the moment the Canadians got their skating legs in Detroit on Thursday, it was like the proverbial men against boys. And to the Canadians' credit, they how many times have we seen them come out, you know, flat on home ice? They buzzed and didn't stop.
No, they were great. Montreal played really, really well. I give them full credit. That's not their fault Detroit didn't show up. That's Detroit's fault. Montreal takes advantage. That's how it works in pro sports. The other guy wants to lay down, step on him and crush him. And that's what they did. They did the right thing. The bad news for Detroit is they get Winnipeg next. That's going to be no fun, I don't believe. Winnipeg is playing fantastic hockey.
But how about Paul Byron, Pierre? For the last couple of years, people have said, you know, he skates well. He's a good handy guy. He can move up and down. But nobody seems to be willing to say flat out that this guy is a productive, valuable National Hockey Leaguer and is quite capable of playing as high as the second line.
For sure. Absolutely. That's pretty apparent right now. And what he's found with confidence, and clearly he's got a lot of it, he's found a way to beat goalies because his shot has really improved. From when he came into the league with Buffalo to when he had a short time in Calgary to now being in Montreal, that guy has evolved into a player that has a huge amount of offensive confidence. So you got to be really excited for him. I am. I know that. And again, I'm going to go back to the backstory in this one. Larry Carrier deserves a ton of credit. He's the one that had the inside knowledge when he was put on waivers by Calgary because of his time in Buffalo to go out and get him. And that's when you steal players. When you know a guy maybe a little bit better than somebody else, and you have the moxie to go to your manager and say, hey, this guy's on waivers, let's snap him up. And they did it.
Well, obviously, like, it's feel good about it. Try to bring that into the next game, but at the same time, not change anything, try to play the same way.
First of all, I know he's big, and he can also skate. He's a good skater, and I know he's, you know, in my estimation anyways, he's got a little bit more offensive talent than I guess he brings on a lot of nights. So, first of all, I didn't want to disrupt my other lines that were going well. I thought it was the easiest move to make and put Byron Fraser back at center. But to be honest with you, I didn't know how it was going to work out. You know, I was hoping it was going to work out the way it did, but, you know, the only way I could find out was by trying him.
And again, talk about knowing your players. Pierre likes Jacob Delarose. He defended, while some of us mocked the move of throwing Delarose alongside Alex Galchenyuk and Paul Byron. And two games against Detroit, he's got 4 points.
Well, I'll just say this. Vegas didn't make a lot of mistakes when they put their roster together. I believe that was one mistake. They could have had that player. And I told you at the time, if there's one player on the Montreal roster that I want that hasn't been protected, it's him. Because I know he can be cultivated. He's a good player. He's got a hockey brain. And he has the ability to make plays with elite players. And if he doesn't help you score, he can help you win games by shutting people down. He's a smart hockey player. And those aren't fun guys to watch. Those are not fun guys to scout. Those are not fun guys to pay $150 a ticket to watch play. Those guys, they're hard to find, but they matter when it comes to team building.
So take us into the world of scouting for a second here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, fans going out and they see a big guy who skates well and doesn't seem to be doing a whole lot of anything else until the last couple of games. What are you looking for when you watch him? What are you specifically looking for? If you're gonna, it's hard to keep your eyes on a guy who doesn't normally produce any offense. But
no, it's not fun to watch at all. So what I watch for is I watch away from the puck. I watch what lanes he fills. I watch where his stick is. I watch how he plays in his own zone. I try to remember how many chances he's on the ice for against, not chances for, but chances against. Does he angle properly? Does he understand face-off responsibilities? Does he box out down low and stay between his man and the net? Is he courageous enough to block shots? I watch all those things when I'm evaluating every player, because there's some, not every player is going to be a pure scorer. And so you have to build your team around different components. If you have just a team full of goal scorers, you're going to score a lot, but you're going to give up more, and you're not going to win. But if you have a team that's got balance and you understand how to create that balance as a guy putting a team together, you're going to be successful. So you have to draft different kinds of players. You have to trade for different kinds of players. And you have to cultivate different kinds of players.
Jonathan Drouin, the man that Delarose is replacing, skated on his own prior to practice today. No indication if he'll be ready to play. If not, it's Delarose between Byron and Galchenyuk.
When you play with Paul, who's got that speed, and with Galchenyuk, who's got that skill, obviously, like, you try to get them the puck as much as possible.
Rod? Gallo?
Well, yeah, I'm just wondering, when it comes to Jacob Delarose, I'm trying to figure out what's the ceiling here offensively, because I didn't see it because of the reasons that Pierre was just talking about. I'm not a scout, and I didn't see a lot of the small things that he does well, and that's why coaches love him. But he had 14 goals in 62 American League games last year. Mm-hmm. In two World Junior Championships, he had 10 points in 14 games. So I'm trying to look at the stats and figure out what can he top out at.
Oh, I think if he plays an 82-game schedule, if he could get 35 to 45 points, that would be awesome. But what the stat that's going to stand out on him is going to be chances for and chances against. How many chances against is he on the ice for? And I think you're going to be surprised. Not going to be that many, because the guy really understands how to play in all three zones.
So when it comes to Delarose or anyone else who's not going to be a heavy-minute special teams performer, in an era in 2017 when slashing calls are up threefold and teams are looking at least one more power play per game than a year ago, you must really have to bear down and utilize the 12 or 10 or whatever number of even strike minutes you're going to get.
You know who's such a good player when it comes to talking about that? Remember Chris Kelly, that played with Ottawa and played with Boston and was a big part of their 2011 Cup win? Chris Kelly was that guy. That was him, exactly what you just said. Just a smart player that could skate, could angle, could take star players out of the game because he was really smart. Those guys are so critical. Jay Beagle down in Washington, just going off the top of my head, is another one of those guys. He's never going to get a ton of points, but look who's on the ice at the end of a game to defend a one-goal lead. Those guys matter. They matter a ton.
Somebody else that you mentioned unprompted the other night was this guy.
Playing with Nick for a few games now, and even when I was down in Laval, I always wanted to play with him. I think I only got a few shifts with him here and there, but I wanted to play with him just because he was an energy guy. You know, he got up, got pucks back, so that's a big thing for if you're on the line with him, is you know you're going to get the puck back when you get in their zone.
That's Byron Fraze.
Yep. Well, Byron is just a very good organizational man. I don't think Toronto was in a rush to lose him. He's a really good face-off player. He's absolutely fearless. He can make plays on the puck. He's very good with board play. He's been well-schooled. I like players like that. They're not salary cap breakers. They can really contribute to your group. Those guys are really important players. I'll use the Pittsburgh Penguins as an example last year. Matt Cullen was such an important part of their team, and he was a fourth-line center. But, you know, I look at Byron Fraze. I'm not saying Fraze is Cullen because he's not, but there's a lot of similarities in terms of what they can provide.
And for the first time all season, the Canadians finally get some production from the fourth line.
I think I said that the other day. You know, you can see they're coming around, and I want to include De La Rose in there as well. But, you know, there's a four-man group right now that just seems to they're finding their confidence. They seem to be they're getting more comfortable at playing together and all that stuff. So that's been coming for a while. Like I said, I've seen them get some good scoring chances, but they hadn't produced. And then last game, it was nice to see those guys produce and get rewarded for their hard work.
All right. I think everybody was happy to see guys like Daniel Carr back and producing, and Nikolai Delorier, another move that, Pierre, you liked. You liked the idea of bringing up a guy who could do what he does. And in addition to just eating up minutes on the ice, they produced the last couple of games. We'll see if it can keep going against tougher opposition, but at least they've had their best moment of the year back-to-back here.
Not only that, they've stabilized themselves in the standings. It's really important. You know, Ottawa's floundering right now, and that's the team that I'm much more bullish on than maybe most people right now. A lot of people are kicking them right in the teeth. I think Ottawa's a much better team than what we're seeing, and that's the team, along with Boston, that I think Montreal's going to have to compete for to get that last playoff spot in their division. I really believe that. I think five teams from the Atlantic Division are going to make it. I really, truly believe that, and I think only three are going to make it. From the Metro, I think five are going to make it from the Metro, and three are going to make it from the Atlantic. So they're going to have to know they're in a battle, but they've stabilized themselves, I think, big time in the standings.
We'll get back to the Habs in a second, but we were kind of discussing, the three of us, Ottawa, after watching that loss last night in Winnipeg.
That was bad. That was really bad.
Erik Karlsson is, I mean, that has to be troubling. He's for the first time in his career, he's got nine games without a single point. I think Mitch mentioned, what, minus 10 or minus 11?
Minus 11 in that span, yeah.
I mean, that's just
You know what stood out? When he broke his stick. And they went off to the races. Winnipeg went off to the races. And I would say last year he may have caught that player. He wasn't catching them last night. That's scary because that's his calling card. But what really troubled me, and I said this on Ottawa radio this morning, their end zone coverage is terrible. And it's in the slot. It's where the centers play. So it's where Brassard plays, and it's where Duchesne plays, and it's where Thompson plays. It's not nearly good enough. And I'm watching Kyle Turris play in Nashville, and that's not a problem for him in Nashville. So I'm starting to wonder if maybe their center icemen aren't paying enough attention in their own zone, and that's becoming problematic for them.
And in that loss to Winnipeg, it was Blake Wheeler who again put on a show. He's the leader in the league in assists with that four-point performance last night.
Amazing. I'm really happy for him. You know, it's what's even more amazing, I think, Mitch, you probably are aware of it, Mitch Melnick, this guy was a much better football player than he ever was a hockey player, and it was Mike Barnett, and I give Mike full credit, Mike Barnett, who drafted him with the, at the time, the Phoenix Coyotes, fourth overall, I believe, and a lot of people laughed. He's a football guy, not a hockey guy. He's recruited by all the Big Ten schools. He was a big-time football prospect. He wanted to play hockey. And, you know, he's proven that he is a very, very good player. Very good player.
Now, they weren't loaded up on that top line last night, Winnipeg, but when they do and they have Laine, Scheifele, and Wheeler together, can you get a better trio than that in the NHL?
Well, you can, but it's not easy. I mean, the thing about Scheifele's a superstar in waiting. he stands out. He's really that good. And, you know, when I watch him play, I know exactly how great he is every night because he's so consistent. Wheeler speed is, you know, as good as anybody's in the league for big people. And, you know, Lonnie can finish plays. Everybody knows that Lonnie can finish plays.
You mentioned the Kings. The Chicago Blackhawks have now lost four in a row. Corey Crawford is on the injured list. Is this an indicator of something bigger, or is it just a slump?
Well, I'm concerned about their defense. I won't even try to pretend it. I think they're probably concerned about their defense. Their power play has been really helter-skelter, and that's not the way it should be when you have Kane and you have Taves and you got Schmaltz and you got Sharp and you got Keith and you got Seabrook. I mean, they've got the weaponry, but the power play has been helter-skelter. I don't think you can blame Anton Forsberg last night in goal. I thought he played exceptional. I thought he was very, very good. But their defense is a bit of a problem right now. And part of it is they don't transition the puck out of their own zone the way they used to. You know, they were one of the better teams in the league utilizing the stretch pass and really opening up odd man rush situations through the neutral zone. They're not doing that anymore.
Bruins on Saturday handed the Flyers their 10th straight loss. Boston is in Nashville tonight, while Philadelphia is in Calgary.
Yeah, well, Boston had the father's trip. So it was really neat to see those fathers celebrating on Saturday afternoon in Philadelphia. Really, really neat to see. And they obviously went down to Nashville right after and probably had some fun. This will be a tough game for Boston tonight in Nashville. In terms of, you know, what Calgary is doing and where Philly is right now, I mean, you got two teams going in different directions. And I think that for Philly, they've got to stabilize this pretty quick. And if they don't, people are really going to keep pointing at the coach, and that's grossly unfair. The coach is more than competent. The problem is they're an extremely, extremely young team. They're transitioning their roster. That's what they're trying to do. They're going to be really good, and they'll get the last laugh. It's just not going to be right now.
All right. Edmonton nearly blew a 6-1 lead in the third period on home ice Saturday to Calgary. They ended up winning 7-5. Right. Calgary made it 6-5. And right. It's obvious they need more. But they claimed Brandon Davidson back from the Canadiens on waivers after the Habs couldn't find a taker for him in a trade. Where is Edmonton going?
Well, they're trying to get stable. They need Connor going all the time, obviously. And when Connor's going, that makes a big difference. Draisaitl moving back to center makes a big difference for them. I was still surprised that they didn't do that from the beginning of the year because then it sets it up. You go 1-2-3 through the middle. You go McDavid, Draisaitl, and Nugent Hopkins, and then Letestu plays at four, and you've got probably as deep a center ice position as anybody in the league, which is really important. But where are they going? I thought that they had a legitimate chance to dig themselves out of this hole, but without Talbot, I don't know. I don't know if they're going to be good enough on defense. We'll see. We'll just see how it plays out.
Goes off the stick of Nielsen. Grabbed and sent back by Danault to Shaw. He shoots and scores. And it's 10-1. Shaw with a wrist shot from long range. And he has goals in two straight. And maybe the 11-1 score from 1995 might be flipped around tonight. Habs need one to do it. The route just keeps going. Every line has scored tonight.
Pierre, I've seen some strange goals go in. I think that's the worst goal I've seen this season. Jimmy,
that was no effort. Jimmy just didn't.
He wasn't paying attention. It's almost like he was looking at something else.
No, Jimmy wasn't into it. And you know what? One of the first shots I think went in was Byron's hat trick, wasn't it? The five-hole goal that Sergio alluded to. I think that might have been one of the first shots in Jimmy Howard.
Yes, Mrazek allowed five, so that was the first goal on Jimmy Howard. That's right.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. So even on that one, and I'm not taking anything away from Paul, but Jimmy wasn't ready for that one either.
So as a staff, you've now, you know, you've exploded offensively. I suppose, you know, outside of that eight goals against Ottawa, that this has been the biggest offensive outburst by the Montreal Canadiens. It's coming against a team going in the other direction, but you're still in the middle of this long homestand before you hit the road. Against a very tough opponent who will be in town tonight, the St. Louis Blues. What is the message, or what was the message today from Claude Julien and the staff to the players?
We've solidified our position. Now let's take another step forward. We don't rest on our laurels here. This is a really tough league, and we're playing against some of the major iron in the Western Conference, a team that's four lines deep and getting a lot of their injured players back. So we take it to the next level, and we dictate the terms on our home ice. But we don't look back. We look ahead. That's the number one thing you got to talk about.
Where are you tonight in Pittsburgh? You staying in?
Well, my friend Gordon Miller.
Working with Gord. Okay.
Yes, Gordon Miller.
He's not staying in.
Okay, but no, you got to give him a hard time on this.
Yes.
When we worked together, we had one rule when we traveled. We only flew in and out of Chicago if we were working there. We never used Chicago as a waylay where we would transfer to another flight. Do you know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
Well, Gordon Miller, because he wants to build up his Star Alliance program, sorry, Air Canada, decided to fly from Minneapolis-St. Paul, where he worked a U.S.-Canada women's game yesterday, to fly from Minneapolis-St. Paul to Chicago rather than take a Delta flight, which is what yours truly told him to do, into Pittsburgh. So he's actually late for our dinner appointment, and he is not happy that I'm probably sharing this story right now.
It's too late. He should have listened to you.
He definitely should. And you know what he's going to say to you? He's done that so many times. He's missed dinner. You'll see.
What he'll say is that he doesn't mind missing dinner since you never pay for it anyways.
No, but see, tonight I actually was paying for it.